Speaking of potential mistakes, HIPAA.
Say what?
Okay. You're listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to episode 361 of the Help Me With HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims with HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. Good evening, Donna.
Hello, David.
I'm ready for you to say, good evening.
Good evening. I can't do that one. Good evening.
Yeah. So, guess what? We're getting closer. We're getting closer.
Yes, we are. And I was excited to see some of the folks that are signing up for the PriceSecBootcamp.com. I don't know. I see it, and I'm like, oh, it's going to be fun having them there.
Yeah. Saw one today, and I was like, oh, how about that?
Yeah, there you go. Shout out to Alex. Going looking forward to seeing you. But the big thing is, let's see, when does this one come out? Pretty close to the time that the early bird price is over.
Mm-hmm.
And but if you're in Cardin Club or HIPAA for MSPs, you know, you still get your special pricing after early bird. So if you want to join the club or join the HIPAA for MSPs, folks, you know, that'll be the way. And it's still a better deal than even the early bird.
That's right. We got discount for days.
Yeah, club members get $600 a plus and off. So bring it on.
That's right.
Anyway, make sure you go to
PriceSecBootCamp.com.
That's P-R-I-S-E-C bootcamp.com.
Yeah, no HIPAA. You don't have to spell HIPAA.
Well, you know, I did a large group workforce training thing last week, and we did start with the how do you spell HIPAA, and you know, it always gets people engaged, and it's fun. And I heard for the first time a really great thing to remember. You know, we say the HIPAA thing, and that's fun. Divide the room, do all of that, and there's no PP in HIPAA.
That's right.
But the one guy says, "I'll never forget it. There's no PP in the HIPAA pool."
The HIPAA pool.
HIPAA pool. And I'm like, okay, that one I got to remember. No PP in the HIPAA pool.
Yeah. Well, HIPAA does feel like you're in a pool sometimes, drowning. Drowning in the water.
With all kinds of people telling you stuff.
I know. I tell you, it was a weekend for me responding to IT companies on online forums, and almost all of them start their question misspelling HIPAA. And it's usually something like, I've got a client that needs me to help them be HIPAA compliant. HIPAA compliant. I'm like, but you...
Okay, you have to be. Let's start with that. You have to be if you're going to participate in helping them.
Yeah. But my favorite one was somebody asked the question, which I have not even responded to yet because I hadn't yet healed from my head banging on the desk. But it was, I'm looking for information on how I get my HIPAA certification. And several people responded, there's no such thing as a HIPAA certification. And he said, well, I understand there's not a HIPAA certification, but there is a certification that is recognized by OCR and NIST, right? I'm like, I don't even know where he's going at this point.
No. No.
Yeah. And it doesn't help when these other people out there run around, you know, giving away seals for their website and being HIPAA verified and HIPAA whatever compliant. This, I don't know. It just confuses people, you know. Just don't do it. That's my thing. Just don't do it. Somebody's trying to make you HIPAA compliant and give you a seal or whatever. Just don't do it. You know, it's just marketing mumbo jumbo, but it causes problems.
Yes.
Anyway.
I agree, David. Does that feel better? Does that feel good? Does that feel good?
It does. It does. Okay. For those of us who are out there educating people, it causes issues because then they point to that and go, well, what about this? And then you have to get this whole explanation about what they're doing, how they're doing it, why they're doing it. It's not the this and then this, the that. And
you know what I say?
What do you say?
I just say that means nothing. Yeah, mm-hmm. I could make one, but I choose not to do that. You know, it means nothing to me. It means nothing to OCR. It means nothing.
Nope.
Now, the good news is OCR is doing the work on rolling out the plans for recognized security practices.
Oh, really good. Very good.
Yeah, they just had the request for information, and then I saw this week that they are rolling out, they're going to do a recognized security practices video presentation. And for all of you who said it's not an amendment, it is an amendment, and I'm going to call it recognized security practices, and that's what it's called. Anyway. Yeah.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, bigger. When it first came out, you said, I think we should call this recognized security practices.
Thank you, David, for giving me the support I needed in my time of need.
That's what I'm here for.
Well, because normally you wouldn't do that. But yes, RecSec. It's RecSec. So here we go. Yeah. And they're allowing you to submit questions by June 17th. I think this comes out after then. But it is. I'm looking forward to seeing what they say and what they picked up on the request for information. I submitted some stuff, but it was from Key West, so it's a little jacked up.
And as you read it, you can probably hear Jimmy Buffett in the background.
But, you know, it is what it is. You get it, you know. I got the good stuff in there, but there may be some other stuff.
Yeah.
But the net of it is we will soon have something that OCR clearly dictates what they expect to see, but you've got to
prove it. Yeah. Not just once, but, you know, you've been doing it for at least 12 months. Yes. Most of you can't even prove you've been doing it for 12 days. On the 12th day of HIPAA.
Uh-oh. We need to do that this year. All right, let's get rolling with.
Yeah, well, I don't have it in front of me, but, you know, if you have it, the shout out to the group who put us on the top 20 podcast to listen to.
I missed it. We get that?
You missed it? What do you mean you missed it?
The top 20 podcast to listen to.
Yeah, for, I think, breaches or something like that, or privacy and security.
Okay, well, I was in Key West. We've established this already.
I could have swore I saw it on your feed.
Somebody may have mentioned me.
Okay. It popped up in mine, and I thought it was you who mentioned me. Apparently, somebody else did.
No.
Right. Well, I have to go back and find it, but yeah.
We're on the top 20 list.
Yeah, did you find it?
No.
No, okay, well, we'll find it. But yeah, we made the top 20 list of privacy and security podcasts. I think that's what it was. And we're up there with the likes of Dark Deck Diaries and Jack Reciter and a lot of other people that we recognize from that list as well. There were some other really good ones.
Wow. So, yeah. I'm feeling very proud, even though I didn't know I should be.
I know. So anyway, we'll find it and talk more about it once we have the information. Yeah, I saw it and I thought it was coming from you. And I'm like, oh, I'll circle back around to this when I have some time.
Now I got to circle back around to it. So there we go.
All right. Yeah, okay.
We'll look forward to that soon, David. Thank you for.
Yep. You're very welcome. There you go. All righty. And if you can't find it, let me know and I'll make my own top 20 list and put us on it. Almost like a, you know, seal of confidence.
Okay, all right. Then leading, here we go. Top 20 best data breach podcast for 2021. Finally found it.
Did you? Good job.
But that's a year ago, David.
But, you know, things
somebody
come
reacted
out,
to it.
But things come out, you know, like we are always talking about 2021 stuff in 22 because it takes that long for the things to come up. But yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll just keep rolling.
All right. Speaking of potential mistakes, HIPAA.
Say what?
Okay. No wonder I hadn't seen it because it was last year. But we still feel proud. Okay.
When I got mentioned, it became the present for me.
Okay. Moving along, we do get amazing things submitted to us from the website.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're amazed that somebody would actually put that on. You know, it's gibberish. It's all kinds of things trying to get responses that they want to do our website. They want to sell us something. They want to.
We should interview them.
Yeah, they want us to interview them about, I don't know, vitamins because we do HIPAA. And so sometimes we miss things because, you know, we get this flurry of madness and then there's good little elements. But lately, for some reason, I don't know about you, but we've been getting the things where people think help me with HIPAA means we will solve your privacy and security problems at the individual.
Yeah.
So we now become a consumer. Sorry, we don't do that. Sorry. You know, we try to answer the best we can.
Yeah, which confuses me because when you go to the website, it's obviously a podcast.
But, you know, people just say, oh, they say, help me with HIPAA. And guess what? We show up and it says, contact us. And they go. So we got this one from someone that said a psychotherapist sent my full record to an incorrect address in an attempt to cause harm. I submitted a complaint. It was dropped after nearly 5 months because she isn't a covered entity. I assume this person sends something electronically under HHS guidelines. In parentheses, she is therefore a covered entity. What do you do if OCR made a mistake? And then we also got another question about reporting to OCR anonymously, so we're just going to cover it all right now. First of all, the assume part means we cannot answer the question. I assume this person sends something electronically under HHS guidelines. What that means, to be a covered entity, the business or the provider of care or whatever that you're seeing, in this case, a psychotherapist, must submit electronic claims for payment of services, period. All of the other transactions have to do with submitting an electronic claim. It's the remittance advice, it's the authorization, it's the eligibility. All of that has to do with insurance processing. If they do not accept insurance, you pay out of pocket, they do not accept any insurance, then they are not going to be a covered entity. If they accept no insurance right off the bat, not a covered entity.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, very small provider organizations, i.e. I got one provider, no help, no nothing. They may take some insurance, but they will file it on paper. If they do that, then they are not a covered entity, more than likely. Because if you submit on paper, they will not send it electronically to you because you don't have any way to receive it. Right? Yeah. So those are the scenarios. And there are plenty of small psychotherapist practices that do not process insurance. You can take their records and file it on insurance, your own insurance, and get paid potentially, but they do not process the insurance. And that makes them not subject to HIPAA.
Right.
So there's so many of those cases, and I have never seen OCR decide someone's not a covered entity in error. Right. So if you can't provide the fact, you know, go back to OCR and say, yes, they accepted my insurance and filed it electronically, then I would assume that OCR did make a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Because yeah, just because you assume that they send, as you put it, they send something electronically. Mm-hmm. I mean, sending somebody an email with your health records in it does not make them a covered entity.
Nope. You know, it has to do with the insurance claims transmission. So then we get to the next question about how do I report a complaint to OCR anonymously? And mm-hmm. We've got a link. There's the HIPAA complaint process where it explains.
You have to wear a hoodie when you do this. So put a hoodie on, pull it up.
Glasses, you know, dark glasses.
Yeah, or if you've got one of the little masks, you know, like
anonymous. What is it?
Yeah.
Oh, the guy. What is it? Yeah, you know what I'm talking. Guy Fox. And then
Guy Fox. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Remember the 5th of November.
Okay, so in that complaint process, they tell you, here are the rules, here's what you have to do. They even have a little questionnaire that you can go through so that it'll help you figure out whether or not it's a covered entity, those kind of things. But again, you have to know if they only accept credit cards and personal, you know, your own money. I mean, they make a point of if that's the only way that they get paid, then they're probably not a covered entity. In that process, though, they will ask who you are. And if they can't initiate a conversation with you to get more details if they have questions, then often they'll be, you know, well, there's nothing else we can do with this because we have an important question and we can't do anything with it because we don't have an individual. Mm-hmm. There is plenty of non-retaliation in there, but if you wanted to file something anonymously, the easiest thing is they do have addresses where you could write a letter and send it, and it'll eventually get through, you know, paperwork. That's one way. The other way is you identify who you are and you create an email account specifically for doing this and set up, you know, Google Voice or whatever phone number so that you can put that in there and say that you want to keep your identity out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they really want the ability to ask questions. So if you leave contact information out of it, so that they can confirm, because a lot of times they'll learn, you know, right away. They have a lot of folks that'll be disgruntled employees, and they'll report something that doesn't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. You can report anonymously, and you can do that a couple of different ways. But on the website, I think it makes you give a email address at a minimum. But go to the complaint process link, and you can just Google HHS HIPAA complaint process. It's on their website at hhs.gov, or you can go to the link in the show notes and follow all of the different options they give you to report. But if you ask to maintain your anonymity, I believe that they will follow your wishes, so mm-hmm. to speak. Anyway, so there you go. There's the question of the week. On the HIPAA.
Say what?
You can't catch me off guard like that.
Well, you didn't do it in the beginning, so I just went with it, thinking I'd catch it. Say what?
There you go. Get your hoodie, you know. Make sure you wear rubber gloves when you're typing your email so they can't Trace your fingerprints.
And a VPN.
Oh, that's a whole nother thing. We were talking about VPNs the other week, and somebody was talking about, well, we're small practice and we can't afford, you know, they can't afford anything half the time. And I'm, you know, this is coming from a specific individual. And I was like, but you can't, just like you can't use free email or free antivirus, not a good idea anyway. The free VPNs aren't a good idea either.
They're really a worse idea.
I know.
The free VPNs are a really bad idea.
Yeah. And you know, so we started down a whole nother rabbit hole, and I was like, no, you can't say do this VPN thing. I mean, it was crazy, the conversation was, because they were talking about VPNing while you're inside the network. Were you VPN into your own network and you're in the network? Okay. I don't know.
Nah.
It was a head scratcher. So anyway, that brings us to our 405D tip of the week. We are on practice number 8 of 10. I know. This one we're going to talk about incident response, the thing that nobody thinks about until it's time to think about.
They don't believe us when we say you need to think about it now.
I know. It's like we will write our incident response plan as we're responding to the incident. Not a good idea.
You know, once you have the incident, that's when it's time for you to at least write down what you did.
Yeah. For sure, write down what you learned, right? There's a lot of assumptions you had. And
what will I do differently? That you should definitely do.
Yeah, but, you know, you have instant response plans for everything. Sometimes they're written, sometimes they're not. But how many things in your life do you have an instant response for? No.
Yeah, it's, you know, today's world, you got to have a plan, Stan, or get off the bus, Gus. It's just that if you don't have a plan to deal with crazy stuff that might happen, that includes crazy weather, you know, it's like, and you should worry about every little detail. You know, what if your phones are down for 2 weeks? What are you going to do? Okay. What if your EHR vendor is down for 2 weeks? The vendor is down. What are you going to do? And people don't, they just assume everything's going to work. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
We had a company call us last week, not a client. And apparently their internet went down, and the lady, and this was a big, like, you know, international company with an office in Charlotte, and the whoever's in charge of the office, when the internet went down, they couldn't get in touch with anybody from their California office because, you know, time difference.
Right.
And so they decided to Google from their phone how to fix it. And they did. And they found a genius person who said, if your internet is not working, it's probably something with your network, so you should stick a paperclip into the front of your router to reset it.
OMG.
So said person calls me and says, our internet's been down. We can't get it back up and running. I need somebody to come out and fix it. And I tried to fix it myself. And I said, what did you do to try to fix it yourself? The thing on Google told me to just put a paperclip into the front of it to reset it, and that didn't work.
Okay.
I said, no, I can't help you. You're going to have to call your California office when they get back in, because you have completely erased everything in there.
That's what the little paperclip thing does, folks. That erases the configuration so that we know nothing.
Yeah. So, you know, I could have sent somebody out and charged her a lot of money to sit there and wait till, you know, somebody in California came in and could help. But being the honest, upstanding person I am, I was like, we can't help you, and neither is anybody else. You have to wait on California to get in.
It's unfortunate. But those are the kind of things that you cover in an incident response plan. So under practice number 8 for small organizations, incident response, the recommendations are, hey, let's establish and implement an incident response plan. Let's start there, before an incident occurs, make sure you understand who will lead your incident investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And don't assume that that person will never go out of town or get sick. You always have to deal with that. Especially now, you know, after the pandemic stuff, you know, you got to realize that people could be like taken down from pneumonia or any number of things and be, I tell you what, when I had pneumonia, thankfully haven't had COVID, but when I had pneumonia, I was asleep for days, like literally did not wake up for days. You're not going to get any information. Well, you could have gotten information, but we're not sure what it would have been, right, David? Okay, execute your incident response plan. Once your plan is implemented, ensure compliance with the elements. At a minimum, your plan should describe steps to be followed in the event of a malware thing being downloaded on a computer or a phishing attack occurs. At least include that.
Yeah, since that's a high likelihood.
Uh-huh. For malware attacks, a good response is to re-image, rebuild, or reset affected computers to a known state, but not until after there's been an investigation. Yeah. Remember, these are cybersecurity recommendations, not HIPAA compliance recommendations.
Yes.
For email phishing, identify malicious email messages, delete from mailboxes, and identify malware that may have been installed, and remediate appropriately if present. So, I mean, it's just saying, make sure you have a plan for doing this. But from a HIPAA compliance standpoint, above and beyond cybersecurity, you got to make sure you also do an investigation and you document it and you make sure that PHI has not been compromised.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
'Tis true.
So now we get to the medium and large. And for me, some of this is really large. I mean, some of the medium, I don't know. You go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the first one, you know, obviously you still have to do everything from the small, but the first thing is to establish a SOC. And if you don't know what that is, then you're already in trouble. But it's in a security operations center. And, you know, certainly you're not going to have one of these in a small practice at all.
No, not in most mediums.
Yeah, right.
Now, your IT provider has a SOC, potentially. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same as SOC 2. Please, let's be clear. Yeah. SOC, Security Operations Center, is not the same as a SOC 2 kind of thing. So don't get them confused.
Yeah. But what they do is they leverage cybersecurity frameworks and people and tools and processes, and they provide dedicated cybersecurity operations. And they use a quote-unquote robust playbooks in responding. So it's definitely a team of people who understand how to respond to security incidents, more so than just, I got a guy. The next thing is to engage in information sharing and analysis center or organization. So these are called ISACs or ISOs.
Yeah. ISACs or ISOs, because you got to have something besides information sharing and analysis organization.
Yeah. But you know, again, if you're in the throes of something, not sure how valuable that might be, depending on what it is, but it should be something you're doing all the time. So whether it's you, somebody in your organization, or you're outsourcing that, but somebody should be keeping up with what's going on. And this is what these ISACs are for.
And it helps you see what they call indicators of compromise, IOCs, mm-hmm. where it tells you how the attacks are happening in other places. So that if something's going on at your place, you can go see what happened to somebody else. And this is all about having the freedom to share information about a cyber attack instead of covering it up, which a lot of people do.
Yeah. And then the last one is talking about incident response orchestration, which allows the automation of incident response playbooks. And to
that's
some degree,
when you're getting into the EDR and XDR. Yeah. And
yeah. And to some degree, we're able to do that even at the small level. Now, but we're selling enterprise level stuff to the small client. So it's not something a small client can go out and get unless they're getting an MSP. But we have the ability through some of our tools to automate responses of certain things and to certain things.
for example.
If there are certain indicators of compromise that are happening, then it, for example, could shut off an endpoint from the rest of the network, or it could run a routine that's going to, you know, reboot a service if the service gets shut down, things like that. So it's, you know, if you've got certain malware that comes in, it's trying to shut down certain services so that it can propagate and do its thing, or tries to shut down the antivirus software or things like that. So there's different types of things, and some of it's automated, some of it generates a response, and there's an automatic SOC response and all this. But the, you know, the more you can have immediate automation, the faster you can respond to something, the more likely you are to stop something bad from happening.
Yeah, so it's really looking for activity that looks like it's compromising things, and it starts shutting it down or correcting it, which is that's what we talk about when we say and automate that response. Because so many cases, somebody gets an alert and, you know, it's Wednesday at 5 o'clock when the alert came out.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, nowadays there are so many things alerting us all over the place that you just have alert fatigue. And so fortunately, automation and systems, they don't get fatigued. So they respond.
Just run out of power or.
Yeah. They respond as you set them up. But it takes, you know, somebody to actually set them up properly before they'll work.
And to buy them in the first place.
Yep.
There's also that.
All right. So that brings us to our topic for the day. We're going to talk about pup-pups.
Yeah. Fido. No more passwords with Fido.
Yeah.
And I get excited about it, but, you know, I'm unlike most the techie things where we've just talked about ISACs and ISOs and all, they get a cool name like Fido.
Yeah.
But they don't like go all in and make it be a puppy.
Yeah, because you know you're envisioning the old RCA dog.
Right. Well, they didn't go all in on that. They come up with some other thing, logo that, you know. But anyway, it should... They're not doing it. Maybe it's just that they don't have those marketing people. But let's talk about what Fido is.
Let's do it.
Fido stands for Fast Identity Online. And there is a Fido Alliance. There's a group that they all of a sudden have the idea, why can't we get rid of passwords? How would we do that? So way back in 2012. So this has been going on for a decade. Way back in 2012, it started out with, well, the names people would know are PayPal and Lenovo, but, you know, there were Knock Knock Labs and some other ones involved. But they created this group and said, we're going to come up with a protocol to do passwordless login for websites. And that's when they came up with the name Fido and said, well, we're Fido Alliance. See, you should have a dog with a cape flying behind it. Mm. Anyway.
Underdog.
I am here to save the day. Okay, so over the years, you know, this that few started out, but now pretty much all the big tech names are part of this alliance. But in May 2020, so we know everybody was looking at something else, but they did roll out, which would have been under a lot of fanfare, a consumer site to start teaching us because they feel like the standard's finally getting there. So that was 2 years ago. And you can go to, we got a link to it here, but you can go to the login with Fido or something like that. That's what it's called. But the FidoAlliance.org. You can get all kinds of information online, and we'll have links in the notes so that you can get to it from our website. But the cool thing is after 10 years, it looks like this might actually happen.
We'll see.
But how many, you know, this is supposedly the password killer. So how many killer tools have you and I been through in our long periods of time in the IT world? This is going to kill email. Oh, my. We talked about that before.
Yeah, there's not one.
No. You know, and this is going to get rid of the need to do this. This is going to get, And there are very few things. What's ironic is you see this ebb and flow that happens back in the mid-90s, everything transitioned to, we need to go to client server. So we would have what we called fat clients.
Mm-hmm.
And all this processing would take place on the individual computers, not on the servers. And you had to load all that. And then if somebody went, wait, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of processing power. So now we moved everything back to the servers. And it's, you know, not a lot happens on the devices. Same kind of concept, though. This ebb and flow, who knows?
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, and we've got password managers that really make the whole thing of passwords so simple. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't get rid of passwords, but it makes it really, really easy to mm-hmm. deal with hundreds of passwords. And yet today, in 2022, we're still explaining to people what a password manager is.
Mm-hmm.
So even if this is legit, and I mean legit by like it catches, it works and it catches on. It
becomes widespread, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still going to be a massive undertaking, I think, to get people to use it unless the technology somewhere it forces you into it. And then I think you'll see more adoption. But even yeah. password managers, how many times have people, you know, put all their passwords into a password manager and then they put some stupid easy password on the password manager?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you just created a bigger problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you made yourself a sitting duck. But it's the same concept, though. Is exactly what you're talking about, is the idea that you end up with your devices authenticate based on you. And the hope is, you know, everybody now, they use the Face ID on their phone. They have a 6-digit PIN. Please have a 6-digit PIN, not a 4. Please. Not 4. These days, 4 is not, no. But you have those. We're getting used to having to have your device with you for multi-factor. And the whole idea with FIDO is that if you connect with the biometrics or your PIN to your device, then that becomes your authentication in a very generic sort of way. And then your device negotiates with the servers and other tools to authenticate as you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of them now, you know, you can have like, you know, like your apps on your phone or your computer that makes phone calls, the apps on there, you can log in with like Face ID or fingerprint, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you had to create an account with a password first. The whole idea is to get rid of that completely. You just don't even have an account with a password. I don't know. What do you think?
It sounds extremely interesting. I just, you know, it's one of those things where it hurts my head to think about it.
My head.
Hurts my head to think about it.
It's shaking bacon. I helped.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, how do you get rid of passwords? Not like there's not even the initial password.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I create the account as me, so the computer knows it is me, and whatever the computer thinks I am, then that's who has the account. But, I mean, there are layers and layers that, I mean, obviously they've been working on this for 10 years, and every time something else came up, they would try to work with it. And this year, we've really started seeing it ramp up.
Mm-hmm.
So in March, Wired Magazine had a whole thing about death of the password. FIDO Alliance reveals its new plan. Then in May, we see Apple, Google, and Microsoft commit to expanded support for FIDO standard to accelerate availability of passwordless sign-on.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. That's what it would take. If you mm-hmm. got those three jumping in and going, you're not going to be able to use our services unless you use FIDO.
And then, that's, yeah.
Yeah, that'll make it work as far as the widespread adoption of it.
Well, and Fidos put it out there. Our intent is to make Fido part of the DNA we know is using the web. So they're going to do this by they set the industry standards and collaboration. Okay, that's done. We've seen it. Next, they want to be shipping devices and platforms at a massive scale that include Fido. And then the last piece is get Fido built into the regulations and have government embrace it and require it, right? So that's their plan. They've completed number one, and it's got all these certifications that you go through. They've really tried to, after all these years and all the crap we've seen, you know, they've thought of a lot of stuff. There's three levels of certification, and each of those three types of certification, and each of those have multiple levels that you got to do. I mean, they want this to be baked into everything. You know, browsers already support it. So they envision that you'll just go to the website, it'll say, hey, you can do Fido. And you say, okay, I want to do that. And it prompts you for how you're using your device, your Fido key or your fingerprint or your face or whatever. You do that. And then from then on, that's how you get into the website. Now, I see some issues with this. Like when multiple people have to get into the same thing because I'm only going to give you one account. And we run into that crap all the time.
Yeah.
Or I need somebody to come behind me and function, you know. So there's a lot of areas where, you know, it's not going to happen. But again, they're like, look, you're going to start seeing these little, what do you, the I, is it a person in the little logo?
Yeah, that's what I think it is.
It's a person with its arm sticking out towards the F.
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, the F looks like a Facebook F, but it also looks like a stand-up shower. So maybe he's taking an outdoor shower.
Or is it a key? Is it a key? Like a, you know, the, see, so right away, why are we not using a puppy? Okay. Yeah. So anyway.
It looks like the old iOmega I. Remember iOmega device?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember those. When they had those.
The zip drives.
Yeah, the zip drives, yeah. So they've got a lot of stuff covered. You know, recovery of an account when your device is lost and it's linked to stuff. You can sync across multiple devices so you don't have every device has its own login. You know, maybe we are truly on the password killer or at least minimizer.
Maybe.
Yeah. So what brought this out was that this week, this past week, or June the 10th, so this month, Apple did their developer conference. And, you know, Gmail has it. Windows Hello has some Fido. Apparently Mint, eBay, and login.gov all let you do Fido. But Apple came out, and I love the headline from Wired. Apple just killed the password for real this time.
Well, you know what Apple is going to do now? If this actually works and it does kill the password, then in 5 or 10 years from now, Apple's going to come out with a phone that takes passwords. They're going to call it a new feature.
Oh, well, we'll see then. I'll be laughing then, but I'll be retired, hopefully. I'm not doing this podcast with you anymore. But in the Apple Worldwide Developer Conference, they announced that they are going to launch passwordless logins, and they call it passkeys. That's what their implementation is.
Yeah, just don't call it passwordless. That's just
So you have passkeys. It's a passkey. You have to keep pass in there because then they'll be looking for password whatever. Passkey. So they're going to, instead of passwords, you'll be able to log into the websites and the apps using this pass key sometime around September when they roll out their new stuff, iOS 16 and macOS Ventura. And it is the first major real-world shift to password elimination. And, you know, we already got Google and Microsoft. They're on there. You're going to get to hear more about Windows Hello. Android will be jumping in, doing the same thing. Everybody's going to wait and see if Apple fails. Right. And if Apple screws the pooch, I don't know. The other two might try to do it on their own and see if they learn from Apple. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this year, we're finally seeing this come to fruition. And it's certainly something that all of us in this world that, you know, in our niche of a niche of a niche, need to be aware of and pay attention to so that we can have those conversations in the coming months with the people who are going to be asking the questions.
Yeah.
And say, I don't know why it's not a puppy.
Well, you know, it won't be long before before Apple comes out with a dongle that's a finger prick thing for DNA.
Yeah, then you can do well. They'll all be wanting to do that, you know. That's like the little reader that checks your blood sugar.
Yep. Which not in this conversation, but I did hear that the USB-C is going to be the standard, like by law. Which now Apple's like, wait a minute, you mean we got to follow what everybody else is doing?
Well, I mean, my latest MacBook only does USB-C. So good. I'll run around and plug in, you know, I'm trying to convert, you know, I got all these different converters right now. Eventually, yes, USB-C.
That's because you're in the Apple world. You have to convert everything.
USB-C? No, it's all of my other gear with the USB-A that I'm having to plug in to a thing to get it into the USB-C.
No, it's time to replace your equipment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Stuff I've been buying for years. I'm just going to run out and get a new one. I'm not you. I'm not rich like you, David.
Okay.
Ain't neither one of us rich. Yeah. We can't have all that.
Yeah. By the time you get everything done, USB-D will be out.
Oh, good Lord. Let's just stop at C, people. C. The best part about USB-C is it goes in one way. My brother told me a joke. My brother, who's in, you know, entertainment world, told me a USB joke that they had already made arrangements for the, he just said, you know, the guy who created the USB-A, the USB plug. Mm-hmm. And that the plan is, as part of their funeral, they will drop the casket in, pick it up, spin it around, and drop it in again. Okay, well, I think we'll end on that.
Well, the good thing about USB-A is it gave you a really good opportunity to understand what your chances are at the craps table.
It's going to work one way or the other. I don't know. I have a harder time with B than any of them. You know, the B where it's tiny. Not the micro ones. Not the micro Bs where it's different, but where you know, it's just a smaller version of A.
Yeah. Now if we can just get HDMI cables to be, you know, fit either way. Because they annoy me too.
Yeah, but at least they're easier to tell. You know, yeah. It's not completely square.
Yeah, okay. That's all true. Right.
Well, there you have it, David. Let's Fido this.
We are getting out of here. That's what we're doing.
We'll finalize the Fido.
We'll come up with something else that Fido stands for, I'm sure, over a few drinks. All right, folks, that's our show for today. Thanks for listening. Remember, for Donna and myself, that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.